Good morning. Today's daf in Sukkah Lamed Gimel. Here in the third parak now, we're going to go through the Dal Minim. On Sukkah, there's a mitzvah in the Torah to take Dal Minim. Na'anuin is going to come up a little bit later on, but here, the Mishnayos are going to go through each one of the Minim separately, as we pointed out in the beginning of the Masechta. So there are various disqualifications that relate to the Minim that are universal, that apply to all four Minim. Yavesh, Gozel. And then there are going to be disqualifications that are specific to each one of the minim. That's why the Mishnah is going to tackle each one of the minim in of itself. There's a Rashi later on that's going to make this point really clearly. Anyway, so we're up to the Hadassim. So since the beginning of the parak, we started with Lulav. That started back on Choftes. And that continued now for the last three blot. Right? Lamed, Lamed Aleph, Lamed Beis. And now today's Daf, Lamed Gimel. I know we're starting on Lamed Beis, Lamed Beis. But today's Daf, Lamed Gimel. So now we are continuing with the Hadassim. I told you just as a mnemonic, as a great memory aid. So the fact is that today's daf is 33. And as we'll see, the Hadassim are brought to you by the number 3. 3 is really going to be the principal number as it relates to the Hadassim, as we're going to see together. We start with the Mishnah. Hadas agazel v'yavish pasol. Shal asher v'shal nidachas pasol. So we start off with the universal disqualifications that we discussed already by the lulav. If your Hadas is either stolen or dry, it's going to be disqualified. If it is asher v'shal nidachas, if it's either coming from the Asherah tree, right, there's an Asherah myrtle tree that also needs to be burnt. And as we discussed regarding the lulav, once it needs to be burnt, so therefore we invoke the principle of ketute mechta shire, that it no longer has the requisite shear, and that's why it's going to be possible. We know, we learned that the hadassim have to be three tvachim long. All right, that's how we ended off the daf yesterday. Could very well be that it could be some variation of three tvachim, but regardless, it's just for our purposes, we could say it's simple. It has to be three tvachim, and once it needs to be burned, so therefore it doesn't have the requisite shear, and therefore it's going to be no good. Same thing with the Eir Nidachas. The Eir Nidachas, all the possessions in the city. So if there are hadassim in the Eir HaNidachas, that also needs to be burnt, and again, same problem. It no longer has the requisite shear. Good. Nigtam Rosho Nifritsu Alav. So here, we saw this by the Lulav, and now we're going to see it by the hadassim. Nigtam Rosho. Its head is clipped off. Nifritsu Alav, the leaves are torn off. Oh, shahayu anavav merubos me alav. Or let's say you have more berries than you do have leaves. So puzzle, in all these circumstances, it would be puzzle. So here are three disqualifications as it relates to the hadas, where either the head is clipped off, the leaves are ripped off, or there are more berries than leaves. In any one of these circumstances, your hadas is going to be puzzle, the imiatan kasher. Now, in the case of the berries, there is a way to rectify the situation, and that is just simply remove the berries. If the psul is that more berries than leaves are going to be pasul, so then a simple removal of the berries would make that kasher, and the Mishnah says exactly that. However, ein mematim b'yantav, but you can remove them on yantav, and we're going to be discussing a lot of that on the Amud Beis of today's daf, so let's hold off on that discussion until we discuss it. Everyone here has seen hadassim, and you probably never seen the berries. So I'd like to join you in that group of people who has never seen the berries of the hadassim. So, but the Gemara's assumption, of course, is that there are berries that grow on it. And the Rashi gives a very short description of what these berries look like. Right? Rashi says, pri shebo shedome le'anav. Okay, so Rashi says that it's a small little fruit. Now we're going to be describing later on that these fruit, as they start emerging, they look green. In other words, like the leaf themselves, and then they turn to shade. Usually, they turn black. Sometimes they turn red. We'll discuss that later in the later in today's daf. Okay, Tana Rabbanan. We are going to be starting the Gemara with a description of the hadassim. Again, as far as the Torah is concerned, the Torah does not say the word hadassim. The Torah says that that this min that we're going to be taking is enough eitz avos. And what we're going to be doing is that we're going to go from the Lashon HaTorah, which is enough eitz avos, to the way we describe it, which is hadassim. And how do we know that enough eitz avos is a reference to hadassim? I made this point yesterday, but let's reiterate today. The Gemara is going to be, just for a little bit, entertaining that it may be another species. It may not be the hadassim. Maybe the enough eitz avos mentioned in the Torah is a reference to another species altogether. And how do I know that's a reference to hadassim? So yesterday I cited the Rambam. I didn't give a maramakom. So today I'm going to do the same thing. I'll cite the Rambam, but I don't have a particular maramakom within the Rambam. But the Rambam says that not for a second, not for a moment, is the Gemara legitimately entertaining that there's another possibility. meaning we have it as part of a Torah Shabbat Peh, it's part of a Mesorah, that we know that the Anaf Eitz Avos referenced in the Torah is in fact a reference to the Hadassim. It just happens to be that the Torah would like to just simply indicate, point out, that from the Lashon HaTorah, it could also be deduced that it is the Hadas. Meaning aside from the fact that we have the Mesorah, and we know through the Torah Shabbat Peh that it's the Hadas, but we'd like to use the the actual Lashon HaTorah itself to arrive at the same conclusion. So it's just another avenue, it's another path in order to get to that same conclusion. So Tanu Rabbanan, we learned in the Brisa, Anaf Eitz Avos, Anafav Chofim Esetzal. So by virtue of the fact that the Torah describes Anaf Eitz Avos, so we're looking at the language of the Torah, and that means that the leaves have to be covering the actual branch itself. Ve'ezehu ha've'omer ze'hadas. And that's a reference to the Hadas, meaning if you look at the Hadas, so it's exactly that, right? This year, we're only but a month and a half away from being Mekayim the Mitzvah, which probably means that we're going to be purchasing it in a little over a month from now. So when you look at the Hadassim, that's exactly what it looks like. In other words, it's very hard to see the actual branch itself, as the branch is covered by the leaves. So that's Anaf Eitz Avos. That's a reference to the Hadassim. So the Gemara says, good. So, but all we have is a description, the Eim Azesa. Well, take a look at the olive branch. The olive branch also. So you're going to have the leaves covering the branch, and maybe it's the olive branch. So Be'inan Avos Valeka. The Gemara says, no, because we need Avos. It has to be braided. It has to be a way in which the leaves are overlapping one over the other. So Ve'im Adulva, the Gemara says, what about chestnut? Okay, I personally don't have familiarity with the chestnut, but it doesn't matter. The Gemara assumes that the Adulva, right, the Armon, says Rashi, right, the chestnut tree also has this kind of configuration where the leaves are overlapping. So the Be'inan Anaf of Chovav is Eitzav Valeka. So the Gemara says, yeah, but the chestnut, so it's true that there is overlapping leaves. They are in a braided formation, but nevertheless, you're not going to have all the leaves covering the branch. The branches are not going to be totally concealed by the leaves. So the Gemara says, Ve'ema Hirduf. So what about Hirduf? Now, I don't know what the Hirduf is, but nevertheless, Rashi describes over here that the Hirduf branch is going to both be braided and it's going to be covering the branch itself. So I'm Rabbi Derche Derche Noam Valeka. So the Gemara is going to give a couple of reasons why it is that the Hirduf is not going to be acceptable as your Anaf Eitz Avos. So Abaye says, because the Torah's ways are pleasant, and Rashi describes over here that the Hirduf is, it's very thorny. And if you try to handle it, so there's a good chance that you're going to scratch and cut yourself. And that's not what the Torah wants. The Torah wants to be pleasant. And so this is going to be simply an unpleasant way to be Mekayim the Mitzvah. Rava Amar Mehacha Emes V'Hashal Ma'avu. So Rava cites a different pasuk. Seemingly, it's very similar to that of Abaye, but Rashi notes there's a difference between the way Rava saying it versus the way Abaye saying it. Rashi says Emes V'Hashal Ma'avu. Rashi writes V'Ze Einu Lo Emes V'Lo Shalom. Right, it's not peaceful. Shu Asui L'Sam Ha'Mavis. It happens to be that the Hirduf is the plant where it emits a certain poison, and so it can't be that the Torah wants us to use a poisonous branch. Okay. That's why the Hirduf is out of the question. Okay, again, so with the Gemara, just for a moment, right, four or five lines of Gemara, entertain the idea that the Anaf Eitz Avos is not the Hadassim, but it's another plant, and the Gemara made an argument. And again, just to reiterate, the Rambam says that this was all by way of trying to connect the Lashon of the Torah to the Hadass. But our Mesorah, we knew all along that the Anaf Eitz Avos is in fact the Hadassim. Okay, Tanu Rabbanan. So over here, another brisa giving a description of what the hadas needs to look like. So it is kamin klia, it's braided, and it looks like a chain. Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov Omer Anaf Eitz Avos Eitz Shetam Eitzo Upiryo Shava Havi Omer Zehadas. The fact that the Torah equates the leaves and the branch, so the means to say that the leaves and the branch are going to have the same taste. Okay, a little bit difficult to understand. First of all, the Rishonim already pointed this out. By the Esrog, we're going to have a similar drasha where the Torah describes the Esrog, where the leaves and where the fruit and the branch are going to taste the same. Sounds like it's only true by the Esrog, not true by any other fruit. And meanwhile, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, it's true by the Hadassim. And then the second issue, which is kind of more basic, is that you and I haven't tasted the leaves and we haven't tasted the branches, meaning they certainly emit a certain smell. And maybe that's what the Gemara over here is making reference to, but ta'am is not smell. Reach is smell. So it's just, the Gemara is a little bit challenging to understand in terms of what does it mean the leaves and the branch taste the same? We're not tasting either of the two. Okay, anyway. Tana eats avos kasher v'sheino avos pasal. Okay, so the Gemara now is going to point out that avos is not only a description, but also a requirement. Not only does it help us identify what the species are, but on top of that, it's necessary. Which means to say that if it's not avos, if it's not interwoven, so it's going to be pasal. So hechi dami avos, the Gemara says, okay, well, practically, what does that mean? So I'm Rav Yehuda, v'huda kaima t'lasa tarfe bikina. So Rav Yehuda says that what you have to have is that you have to have a triple leaf. So the hadas must have triplet leaves. Now from Rashi over here is a little bit difficult to read, just in terms of what he's looking at, what he's describing. Look at the Rashi. I'm reading the Rashi. T'lasa b'chad kina, shlosha alin, b'kan echad. So the way Rashi describes it is three leaves that are coming out of one kan, which sounds like they're all coming out of the same exact point. Yotze mitoch ukatz echad. So Rashi's description over here leads one to the possible conclusion that the triplet leaves that we need in the Hadas require that all the leaves come out from one singular point. Now that's extraordinarily very difficult and really uncommon. So, and that's a simple reading of Rashi. The other Rishonim, they understood Rashi this way and quite frankly disagree with Rashi, right? The way Tosus describes it is that this reading of Rashi would come out to be tremendous chumra, and our hadasim don't come out looking that way. So the
maybe Rashi means at every nuts tree you have three leaves.
Yeah, there is certainly another way. Yeah, I agree. There is certainly another way to possibly read Rashi, but the Rishonim had Rashi and they understood Rashi the way I'm presenting it, and it's very difficult. It could be that Rashi meant something else, but anyway. The most Rishonim understand that the three Bekan Echad means that basically in the same horizontal line, right? The way that we're used to seeing. In other words, there are three leaves and coming out of three points, but those points are all on the same horizontal line of the Hadas. That is the requirement of Rav Yehuda. V'hu dekama t'lasa tarfa b'kina. Kina over here does not mean one singular point, just simply means the same horizontal plane. Rav Kahana Amar, back to the Gemara, Rav Kahana is of the opinion that even if it's two and one, Rashi, the way Rashi describes it, it's two leaves coming out of one point, it's one leaf growing directly underneath it, but it basically grows on top of the two. That also would be acceptable, says Rav Kahana. Rav Acha Bere Derava, Mahadar Atrei V'chad, Hov Anaf Mipuma Derav Kahana. So Rav Acha Bere Derava, so he was a real chassid. Right? He was a Talmud of Kahana. Rav Kahana said 2 and 1 is fine. So Rav Acha Berei Derava went out of his way to get the 2 and 1 Hadassim because his Rebbe said that that's also fine. So Amale Mar Bar Memele Rav Ashi Abba Leahu Hadas Shota Karile. So Mar Bar Memele says to Rav Ashi, you know, my father, when he saw the 2 and 1, so he described it as a Hadas Shota. Hadas Shota literally means a foolish Hadas. Meaning it's not normal. It's not a normal hadas. That's not how the hadasim normally present themselves. And presumably what he's saying is that it's no good. Meaning it's such a deviant, species of hadasim. You can't really call that a hadas itself. You could argue, and at another occasion, not during the daf today, the Rambam seems to indicate this, that the Trei V'chad, the Hadashota, that the Gemara just described it, is an entirely different species, meaning it doesn't even fall under the category of a Hadas. It's a Min Acher, it's a totally different species. Okay, not for now, but you can make that argument. Tan Rabbanan. Continuing in the Gemara, we're still in Lamed Beis Amud Beis, we are 4 lines from the bottom. Bryce over here, really challenging. The Bryce says that if the majority of the leaves fell off, but as long as the minority still presents themselves as interlocked, so it would be kasher, it'd be fine. Now, Hagufa kasher. Now, the Bryce obviously is tremendously challenging. So the majority of the leaves fell off, and yet you still have avos, you still have the interwoven. So Kevin de Natru Luhutre Avos, Hech Mishkachala. So Gemara says it's really challenging. Meaning we're assuming that there are three on every point. So the majority of three would be two. So how can two of the three fall off and it be interwoven? You can't have that. One leaf cannot be interwoven. So Amar Rabbi Mishkachala. So Abai says, okay. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to offer a pshat in the Braisa like this, as we're now moving to the top of Lama Gimel Amad Aleph. And that is Ba'asa Mitzra'a. So we're talking about an Egyptian, well, Rashi offers two pshatim. Rashi's second pshat is that's an Egyptian hadas, but okay. You could see Rashi for another pshat as well, right? Hadas that grows on the border. Anyway, Ba'asa Mitzra'a Dikaima Shiva Shiva Bechadkina. So over here, an unusual formation of the hadasim. It's not three leaves growing at every point, but it's seven leaves growing at every point. Okay. And now, right, once we start here, so now the numbers work out. So let's say four of the seven leaves. So that's four of the seven leaves leave. Okay, that's my pun of the day. So now that brings us down to three, but three is fine. So Pashalu Talasa. But once you have three, you still have it interwoven. Am Rabbi Shmamina Hai Asa Mitzra Kashalo Shana. So the Gemara says, okay, great. In this discussion, we just concluded that you're allowed to use the Asa Mitzra'a. Now, Pshita, the Gemara says, now, isn't that obvious? No, the Gemara says, it's not obvious. I could have easily have assumed. Hove Islay Shem Levi, Lo Miskasher. So it's got this may be a subspecies. And the only species that are acceptable only are the generic species. So Kamash Malan, so the Gemara says, the Chiddush is that no, that this in fact would work, this would be acceptable. So the Gemara says, Ve'ema Hachinami. Well, I don't understand. Meaning the argument was so good. Meaning this very well may be a subspecies, and the Torah doesn't want us using a subspecies. The Torah wants us using a generic species. So the Gemara says, Eitz Avos Amarachman Mikamakom. So the Gemara says, no. Because when it comes to the requirement of the Hadasim, the Torah doesn't say the word Hadas. The Torah just simply says Eitz Avos. Which means that basically, if it is a Hadas, even if it's a subspecies, but if it's a Hadas that qualifies as Avos, so then it would be acceptable. The Gemara here, a couple of challenging lines regarding a specific scenario. Yafshu rovalav v'nishar bo shlosha badei alim lachim kasha. So if, let's say, the majority of the leaves have dried up, but you have nisharu, but what you have remaining is shlosha badei alim. Now the word badim over here, it's not perfectly clear what it means. So I'll read Rashi in just a moment. But let's just at least familiarize ourselves with the lashon of the Gemara, of this Braisa. So if I have as long as I have three of the Badei Alim still moist, so it would be kasher. And then, V'am Rav Chista of Rosh Kol Echad V'Rechad, and Rav Chista says it has to be on the Rosh, on the top of each one of the what? Okay, so the basic point of the Braisa is that you start off the yantav with everything being moist and fresh and it's going to dry up. At what point in time is it still going to be kasher? So the simple point of the braisa is that as long as there are just a remaining number of the essential leaves that are still moist, so it would be kasher hadasim. Okay. Practically speaking, this happens much more often when it comes to the aravos. The aravos are the grouping of the four. The aravos are for sure the weakest link in terms of their ability to dry up really quickly. Okay, but regardless, the point is that when it comes to the hadasim, so as long as they have three remaining. Now, it's really unclear in the braisa of what is going on over here. If you look at Rashi, shlosha badei alin lachin, so Rashi writes, shlosha badim avichol vad ubad shlosha alin lachin. So Rashi understands clearly that the word badin over here is a reference to the actual stem itself. And in each of the stems, you have three alin lachin. Because less than three, and you no longer have it interlocked. So the way Rashi seems to describe it is that as long as I have three remaining badin. Now, again, what does that mean, three remaining badin? How many badin did you have to start with? Okay, so that's where Rashi becomes a little bit tricky and it becomes a little bit difficult to navigate. It could be some Rishonim say this within Rashi. It could be that Rashi was describing a scenario where you started off with more than three hadasim to begin with, more than three stems, right? There is a discussion to be had. Well, we're actually going to be discussing it tomorrow in terms of the number of hadasim. So we know that you need three hadasim, right? Three stems, three branches. And when it comes to the Aravos 2, and when it comes to the Esrog 1, and when it comes to the Lulav 1. However, many Rishonim are of the impression, the Rambam clearly reads like this, that you can have more than three stems of Hadasim. right? And many have the minhag to add more than three, right? Six, nine, whatever the minhag is. So anyway, so it could be that what Rashi is describing over here is that you started off with even more than three hadassim. You had whatever, six, nine, whatever the number is that you had. So as long as three of the remaining branches, that's a possible way to read Rashi, as long as the three remaining branches are going to still be moist, meaning the leaves of these branches are going to be moist, and you only need three leaves. Now, but those three leaves, which three leaves? So that's the next Rashi. Uver rosh kol echad. Shiu alim halachin b'roshei habadim. So in order to give this a shem hadar, so the three remaining leaves must be the three top leaves. So the way Rashi now describes the Gemara is that over the course of Sukkot, you can have all the leaves dry up as long as the three top leaves of three stems are still going to be moist. So you still have what is a kosher set of hadasim, and you can still use it. Okay, good. That is all just Rashi's reading of the Gemara. There are many other ways to read the Gemara over here, but again, for the purpose of the Daf Yomi, just going to present Rashi. We go on in the Gemara, Nikdam Rosha. We're talking now about the heads of the Hadassim being clipped off. The Mishnah says that's a disqualifier. Tani Ula Barchina Nikdam Rosha V'Alta Botamara Kasha. So let's say you clipped off the head, but in its place now grew a berry. So then it would be Kasha. So by Rav Yirmiya, Nikdam Rosha Meir Rav Yanta V'Alta Botamara B'Yanta Mahu. Well, let me ask a question, says Rav Yirmiya. Let's say you clipped it off before Yantav, and then the berry grew on Yantav itself. It is admittedly a little bit challenging to imagine that a berry is going to grow on top of it, specifically in a scenario where, obviously, the hadas is already detached from the ground. Okay, but it could very well be that maybe it's sitting in water. Whatever the case may be, the question of Rav Yirmiya will become clarified in just a moment. You clipped it before Yantav. Sorry. Right, yeah, the head of it was clipped before Yantav, disqualifying it before Yantav. The berry grew on the top of it on Yantav, now re-qualifying it. So what would be the halacha? So is there going to be dichu as it relates to mitzvahs, or is there no dichu as it relates to mitzvah? So let us just give a brief introduction to the concept of dichu so that we can properly understand our Gemara over here. Dichu. So dichu is a concept that comes up in the world of karbanos. That means to say that if you have a carbon that was disqualified, either because of the carbon itself, in other words, some sort of disqualification occurred within the carbon, or so for some other outside factor, right? The mizbeach became dysfunctional, right? A chip in the mizbeach, whatever the case may be. So now this brings us to the question of dichui. Now within the question of dichui by carbonos, so we know that once an animal is rejected, so then that's it. In other words, it's going to be permanently rejected. However, there are many considerations to have regarding this topic and discussion of dichui. And that is dichui, first of all, can be broken up into two categories. And that is dichui mikara versus nira v'nidche. And as we're going to see, this is a big topic that comes up in today's daf. Dichui mikara means that it was never eligible. It was always ineligible. And then at a later point in time, it accepted eligibility. So this is what's called dichui meikara, and this is a lesser form of dichui, as opposed to nira v'nidche, where it was once eligible to be brought as a carbon, and then it becomes ineligible, and then it becomes now re-eligible. So there, the nira v'nidche is a higher form of dichui, and it's intuitive. The idea is that once something has hit a point of eligibility, and then becomes ineligible, that is a total rejection. Masha'enkin in the dichui mi'ikara, where it was never eligible. So there, okay, it was never eligible. In other words, it was never on the table. So in both of these circumstances, so by karbanos we say that there is in fact going to be dichui. Okay, in the scenario of dichui mi'ikara, it is open to a debate by karbanos. But nevertheless, let's right now for our purposes, let's just simply say that these are two different forms of disqualification, which certainly are true by karbanos. Now, what we're trying to do over here is carry that over to mitzvos. Are we going to say that the dichui concept that's true by karbanos is that also going to be true by mitzvos as well? That's the question that Rabbi Yirmiyah is asking. So the Gemara says, "Yesh dichui it's a mitzvah solo tif shalei mihadidnan." So the Gemara says, "Look, I think we have a Mishnah that speaks to this idea very clearly. The Mishnah is in Chulin. We know that after shechting either a wild animal or a bird, so there's a mitzvah of kisui adam." So the Mishnah over here describes kisov and iskala patrim lechasos. So let's say you cover the blood in dirt and a strong wind comes in and blows the dirt away, exposing the blood. So that's, you did the mitzvah. You fulfilled the mitzvah. There's no requirement to go ahead and to cover it again. Kisav eruah chayv lechasos. Now, if the wind covers it, so then you are obligated to cover it. Now that's the Mishnah in Chulin, and that Mishnah needs explanation. Okay, and when the Mishnah describes the wind covering it, and the Mishnah is saying that you're obligated to cover it, that's talking in the following scenario. The wind covered it, and then subsequently the wind uncovered it. Under those circumstances, you're obligated to cover it. And to that, the Gemara's question is very simple, meaning the wind covered it, meaning that now at this point in time, we no longer have a mitzvah opportunity. In other words, the mitzvah opportunity was now pushed off, nidcheh, and now the wind uncovered it. So now, chozer v'ne'or, or, right, I'm borrowing a terminology. In other words, now the opportunity presents itself again. So this is now a scenario of nira v'nidcheh, and now nira. It was eligible, ineligible, and now becomes eligible for the mitzvah. The Amara Papa Zosamer saying dichulates the mitzvahs. Now, by virtue of the fact that the Mishnah says that you need to cover it, so it was coverable, uncoverable, now coverable. So under those circumstances, the Mishnah's instructions are you must cover it. So Rav Papa deduces from that Mishnah, you see that there's no dichulay as it relates to mitzvahs. Meaning there is dichulay as it relates to karbanos, but Rav Papa is pointing to that Mishnah in Chulin and proving that there's no dichulay as it relates to mitzvahs. So the Gemara says, okay, very good. So that's Rav Papa. So now that Rav Papa concluded there's no dichui as it relates to mitzvot, so what's our discussion over here? The Gemara goes on to explain. The Rav Papa gufa mi ba'ilei. Mivsha pashilei dein dichui etzal mitzvot, lo shna l'kula v'lo shna l'chumra. O dilma sefuki misafkele l'chumra amin l'kula lo amin anteku. The Gemara goes on to explain. Yes, Rav Papa says that Mishnah chulin by kisui adam tells us that there's no dichui. But there are two possibilities of how to understand Rav Papa's conclusion. Either, number one, is that the Mishnah is telling us definitively that there is no dichui, and it doesn't matter how that results, whether that results in a kula or whether it results in a chumrah, there simply is no dichui, or maybe no. Maybe the other possibility is that Rav Papa's unsure. And look, over there, let's be machmir, meaning it very well may be that there's no dichui. I'm not saying that there is definitively no dichui. It may be that there's no dichui. So over there, why don't we play the safe side? The safe play over there would be to cover the blood. Either maybe dichui and it might not be a mitzvah anymore, or maybe there is no dichui and there still is a mitzvah opportunity. But not because he's definitively concluding, he's just simply saying, I don't know. So I don't know, let's be cautious. But over here, what would caution tell us? Caution would tell us in our case over here by the Hadas that did not, that its head was clipped off before Yontif. And on Yontif itself, it grew a berry. If we say there's no dichui by mitzvah, so now it's eligible. Meaning, it was nira, it was nidche, it was chozer v'nira. Okay, but it's eligible. But if Rav Papa just simply didn't know, and he's playing it safe, so over here, what would playing it safe mean? Playing it safe would mean, don't use it. Because maybe there is, in fact, dichui as it relates to mitzvahs. That's the Gemara's question within Rav Papa. Okay, so the Gemara says, so that's our point of uncertainty. Lema Kitanai, the Gemara says that maybe this is a machlokas hatanai. So in other words, this idea of whether there's dichui by mitzvos could very well be what's at issue over here between the following machlokas hatanai. Avra v'loktan pasal, divrei Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Tzadok. So let's say a person on Yontif saw that his hadasim had too many berries on them. The berries exceeded the leaves. Fine, so he's now picking off the berries. Now we know you're not allowed to do that. The Mishnah at the beginning of today's daf taught us that you're not allowed to do that. But he did it. So under those circumstances, so now what? So according to Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Tzadok, so you were over and you picked off the berries, they're pasul. The Chachamim say that it's kasher. Obviously, the Chachamim didn't want you picking off the berries, but bidi eved, once you did it, it's going to be kasher. Now, what is that machlokas predicated on? So the Gemara now tries to give a pshat. Savru dekulei amalu levein tzarech egen. It could very well be that, let's start off with the assumption that lulav does not require to be bound up together. As we know, machlokas hatanayim. And even if you're going to argue that there is a requirement to bind it up, we're not going to learn out lulav from sukkah. You know, by sukkah, so there needs to be an asiyah by the sukkah. So an idea that we spoke about numerous times in the earlier part of our Masechta, that the sukkah has to be done l'shem sukkah. Again, not the kavana has to be done l'shem sukkah, but there needs to be an asiyah. There needs to be an action. You can't hollow out the haystack and use that as your sukkah. Why? Because there was no asiyah by the schach. So, is the same thing going to be true regarding lulav? Well, if I don't learn out one from the other, so then we could separate the two. And the asiyah requirement is only by the sukkah, not by the lulav. Now, basically what the Gemara is trying to suggest right now is that tasef lo mana asui is not on the table right now. It's off the table. Either, number one, because lulav doesn't require an eged altogether, so then there simply is no asiyah to talk about. Or even if lulav sarach eged, but we're not learning out the halachas of tasef from sukkah over to lulav. So let's take tasef and just take it off the table. Now, my lav b'hakamiflgi. Now, if our assumption is correct, so then what's the only way left to explain the machlokas? In the following. And the issue over here is a simple question of whether you subscribe to dichui or you do not subscribe to dichui. If you say that there's dichui, so that means that as it goes into Yontov with the excess berries, so that's it, it's disqualified. And now it's been rejected, and now it no longer is able to become eligible. It's no longer re-eligible. On the other hand, if you hold ein dichui, so that means that even though it was disqualified, it could become qualified once again. That now presumably is the machlokas. And so what the Gemara now is suggesting is that this question of whether there's dichui, eitzel mitzvah, so there is no dichui, is in fact the machlokas tonight. Lo, the Gemara rejects. Dikuli amar lo amin yesh dichui eitzel mitzvah. Everyone's of the opinion that that we don't say that there's dichui by mitzvahs. V'achem emele v'lo misukah kamiflagi. Over here, the issue is exactly what we try to avoid the issue being. And that is the issue of whether we learn out lula from sukkah. Marsav yafina lula misukkah, marsav lo yafina lula misukkah. The question becomes whether or not we learn out lula from sukkah. By sukkah, there's an asiyah requirement. Same thing is true regarding lula. There's an asiyah requirement. And that means to say, and this is the way Rashi explains it, is that look, here's what happened. In other words, prior to Yontov, you put together your Dalminim and you already tied it up before Yontov. Right? At the end of today's daf, we're going to be talking about the issue of making the eged on Yontif itself. But presumably you tied it up before Yontif. So that means that you did your asiyah prior to Yontif. And now that the hadasim are in the eged, and they are disqualified, so again, dichui is off the table. And over here now, if I pick off the berries on Yontif, again, you're not allowed to. But if I pick off the berries on Yontif, so now what do I have? I have kasher dalaminim, but I didn't do the asiyah. Meaning I didn't bind it up while they were in a state of kashrus. They only turn out to be kasher after it was already bound. And therefore, it's a failure of asiyah. And again, if there's an asiyah requirement by lulav, so now it's not going to be good. Now, is there a asiyah requirement by lulav? So the Gemara says it's exactly what's at issue over here. Do I learn out lulav from sukkah? By sukkah, there for sure is an asiyah requirement. And does the gzer shava or hekesh, I'm not really sure what the limud is, but does it carry over from the sukkah over to the lulav? Or the Gemara says is that, look, there definitely is a limud. The only question is whether or not there's an eged requirement by the lulav. It's just a question of whether or not lulav requires an eged at all. If lulav requires an eged, so then there is a siya by lulav, and therefore, it has to be tasav alam and asui. If you hold that lulav does not require neged, so then there simply is no asiyah requirement by the lulav. The Tanya, the Gemara quotes the Braisa, lulav bein agud, bein she'eno agud, kasher. According to the Tanakama, your dalminim do not have to be bound together. Hadasim, aravas, lulav do not have to be put in an eged. And Rav Yehuda Amar, agud kasher, she'eno agud pasul. And Rav Yehuda demands, requires that the lulav be in a state of eged. You have to bind it together. My time to Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda yalav lekicha lekicha me aguda zezob. Ksiv hasam ulakachtem lechem yam rishon. Ksiv hasam ulakachtem agudas ezov. So he learns it out based on exereshava. Ma lahalan aguda afkan aguda. Now over there, right? Ulakachtem agudas ezov by Pesach Mitzrayim. So we're supposed to be taking a bundle of ezov. So there, it's clear that it's a bundle. The pasuk says a gurda. So over here, the same ulakachtem by dalaminim tells us that it also has to be in a state of aguda. That is shitas Rav Yehuda. It's gzeira shava v'rabanan leisul lekich lekicha. Now the chachamim don't hold the gzeira shava, meaning they don't have a mesar for the gzeira shava. Okay, so what comes out now is whether or not lulav requires eged is a machlokas. And so that, the Gemara says, this could very well, could now be the Nikud HaMachlokas between Rav Elazar ben Yaakov and the Chachamim. The question as to whether or not you pluck off the berries on Yontav. So is that now going to be Pasul Kasher according to Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, Pasul, according to the Chachamim Kasher? And now the Gemara says that really what's at the issue over here is whether or not there's an Eged requirement by the Lulav. If there is an Eged requirement, so over here, what have you failed in? You failed in Tasev Lomanasui. Meaning because you bound it up before Yontif started, and now you pluck off the berries on Yontif, so now it is not Asiya. You did not bind it in a state of kasher, so you failed an Asiya. If, on the other hand, there's no Eged requirement, so then there is no Asiya requirement. That is how the Gemara is setting up the Machlokas. So basically, to quickly summarize, you pick off the berries on Yontif, Machlokas Tanayim, and the Gemara now gave us three different ways to understand the Machlokas Tanayim. Number one, they're arguing about dichui. Number two, they're arguing about whether or not we're going to learn out the asiyah requirement from sukkah or we're not going to learn it. Or number three, we would learn it. It's just a question, is there an asiyah altogether by dalamina, meaning is there an eged requirement? Good. Mantan la'adatan rabbanan, just finishing up on this last point. We have a braisa, lulav mitzvah la'ogdavim la'ogdav kasher. There is a mitzvah min amuvchar to go ahead and bind it together, but if you don't do it, it's acceptable. So money, Rabbi Yehuda, kilo agdam, my kasher. Now, whose shita is this? If it's the shita of Rabbi Yehuda, so Rabbi Yehuda requires, he demands an eged, and failure to do so means that you don't have a kasher dalaminim. So it can't be the Rabbi Yehuda. And he rabbanan, my mitzvah, ka'avid. Now, according to the chachamim, what mitzvah is there? Meaning, according to the chachamim, there is no requirement for eged. So the olam rabbanan mitzvah, mishum zekele vanveil. So the Gemara says, it is the shita of the chachamim, but as a function of that we have to beautify our mitzvahs, we want to make our mitzvahs look presentable and organized. So as a result of that, so there is a lichatchila to bind them together. Good. And that, of course, is the halacha. The halacha, we follow like the chachamim, that lulav ein tzarech eged, but at the same time, though, we're ma'ageh, we bind them together, so that it's nice, neat, and organized. Oshayu anavav merubim. We go back to our Mishnah. Another one of the disqualifications of the Hadas is if the berries exceed the leaves, so it is pasul. So Amr Rav Chisda Davizir Rabbeinu Agadol Amro. So Rav Chisda says this was said by Rabbeinu Agadol. When Rav Chisda is making reference to Rabbeinu Agadol, explains Rashi is referencing Rav, which happens to be his Rebbe. V'hamakum yebazro, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu should give him siyata d'shmaya, then in this particular halacha, I'm going to say it over correctly. Okay, and you'll see in just a moment. The Gemara is over here, fantastic foreshadow. Because he's beseeching, he's asking for siyata d'shmaya, because what he's going to say is highly controversial. But okay, so v'hamakom yebezer lo shanu ala b'hamakom echad. This idea that when the berries exceed the leaves, it's no good. That's only if the berries are in one location. Avav b'shlam b'shoshem makom is kasher. But if the berries are found in multiple locations on the hadas, so then it would be kasher. So amalei Rav, as we turn now to the top of the Amud Beis. So Rav says, upon hearing this, that's very difficult to understand. What do you mean? If the location of the berries are scattered amongst the hadas, so now you're looking at something which is basically menumar. It's spotted. Looks like a leopard. Meaning it is uneven. It's no longer uniform. If anything, this will make it look more unattractive. Rashi says it certainly fails on the front of hadar. And for sure it's going to be pasul. So ala'i itmar hachi itmar. So the Gemara says, okay. So what we have to do is we have to say that when Rav Chisda said over this halach in the name of Rav, so that wasn't what Rav said. But rather, Rav must have said something different. So a modification on the halacha. So, Ela i'idmar hachi i'idmar, oshayu anava meruba me'alav pasul. Good. So we start off with our Mishnah that says that if the berries exceed the leaves, it would be pasul. Now, Amar Rav Chisda davizir Rabbeinu Agadol Amar v'amakum yebezrol. So again, now, Rav Chisda is quoting over Rav. And again, he should receive siyata d'shmai so that it be said over correctly. Lo shenu ala anav shcharos. That's true if the berries are black. Ava anavav yirakos, mine dahadasu v'kasher. However, if the berries are green, so then it's going to be kasher. So that means to say that as the berries start growing off of the branch, so they start off green. Good. That's right? At least the fruit that I know and that I'm familiar with. So that's how they all start off. They start off green, and then eventually they change color. So green no longer is going to be a distracting color. It's not going to remove the hiddur of the hadas. But once now the green turns into black, so now that is going to be a lack of hadar. So good. So that's the limitation of the Mishnah. The Mishnah says that the berries exceed the leaves, so then it's going to be possible. But if the berries are green, so then it's going to be kasher. Amra papa adamus kishcha rose damyan. So and now let's say the berries are not black but they're red. So he says red and black are two similar colors. Amra bichanina haydam shachor adam hu elashalaka. Taking us to a Mishnah Nida, the Mishnah Nida describing the discharges of a woman that would render her a Nida and therefore be Mitame the woman. So the Gemara goes through five, the Mishnah goes through five different colors. Of the five different colors, there are four reds and one black. And the Gemara goes on to describe over here, the Gemara here quotes it, that really the truth of the matter is that the black is really red. Now, as far as blood is concerned, so the blood went through oxidation. And so therefore, the red blood turns black. Good. So, okay, but the point is that there is a relationship between the hue of red and the hue of black. So similarly over here, when we're describing the berries and we say that the black berries are going to disqualify the hadas, red also is going to disqualify. Why? Because of the relationship between the colors of red and black. Now it's funny, based on the Rashi that that I didn't read through, but based on the Rashi, it seems like it really doesn't matter what the color is as long as it's not green. Meaning from Rashi, what it sounds like is the fact that it is a different color than that of the leaves themselves. That's the problem. Over here, what it sounds like from the Gemara's presenting is that it has to be some sort of permutation of black. So it is, to me at least, a little bit confusing in terms of what exactly the psul is. Is the psul that the berries are no longer green in color? Or no, is the psul the fact that the berries have to be a shade of black? And red is considered a shade of black. Okay, so admittedly, that's my own personal confusion. Im mi'atan kasher. Okay, the Gemara wants to know that if the Mishnah says that if I remove the berries, so then we can take the disqualified hadasim and make them requalified. Now, dimi'atu ahimas, the Gemara says, now when did you remove the berries? Ilema mekame de la agde pshita. So the Gemara says, now if you remove the berries before you even did the agad, meaning we're not even on yantiv, obviously. On Yantiv itself, you're not allowed to remove the berries. I know on the Amud Aleph of today's daf, we talked about if you did so, be'isser. But we're assuming right now that the removal of the berries was done prior to Yantiv. So the Gemara says, now, if you remove them even before you bound it up, that's obvious. Meaning there's no chiddush over there whatsoever. El alabasa del agde. So it must be that after having bound up your hadas, aravos, and luluf together, so then you notice that there are too many berries on the hadas, and then you removed the excess berries. So the Gemara says, now, isn't that a case of dichumi karahu? So that means to say that it was, when originally bound together, ineligible. So tisha mina dehavim dichumi karahu havi dichui. So the Gemara says, so at least we can now conclude that dichumi karahu is not considered dichui. Meaning bringing us back to the discussion we had in the Amud Aleph. So this seemingly is an example of something that was originally rejected. And by virtue of the fact that I bound it up, and then I removed the berries again, all this before Yontif, so doesn't that at least tell me that even though it experienced dichui mikara, so that is not going to disqualify the question that we asked in the Amud Aleph? So the Gemara says no. La'olam basa da'agde v'kasafar eged azmana ba'amahu v'azmana ba'amah lav klumhu. So the Gemara says no. No conclusion can be made whatsoever. When you bind it up before Yontif, that is not now the mitzvah being activated. Meaning we are not yet in the stages of giving this a shame mitzvah. When does the shame mitzvah begin? Tonight. Now, this lends itself to a really interesting discussion because obviously tonight, Yontif starts, you can't shake Lulav and Esrog. The mitzvah of Lulav Esrog only starts in the morning of. But at least at night, you could read the Rashi, I'm not going to go through the Rashi right now, but Rashi speaks very clearly along these lines, that once the night begins, it now has a shem mitzvah. So then we can have the discussion of Dichui, Dichui, Mikara, Nira, Venitzche. Prior to Yontif, even though I tied it up together, it doesn't have a shame mitzvah as of yet. So the discussion of dichui doesn't even get off the ground. So even if I remove the berries after I tied it up before Yontif, we're not even on the discussion of dichui because it doesn't have a shame mitzvah. And tying it up, says the Gemara, hazmana ba'amah. That's just getting everything ready. Okay. The Ein Mamatim B'Yom Tov. Now, it happens to be that this next discussion of the Gemara over here, this could be an extraordinarily long discussion. It is a really long discussion, and we're going to do it in short order. Apologies on the front end. Ha'avar V'Liktan Mai Kasha. So if you remove the berries on Yantav, so it would be kasha. It's a dik in the Mishnah, meaning the Mishnah says ein mimatim b'yantav. You're not allowed to remove them on Yantav, giving us the indication, the inference that if you remove them, bidi evid, it would be kasha. Now the ishkar emas. Now when did it become black? In other words, we assume that the berries going into Yantav were green, and then they blackened over Yantav. So if it blackened before Yantav began, so that's what's called dichumi kara. So tishamine dichumi kara de lo havi dichui. So that would lead us to the conclusion that dichumi kara is not considered dichui. Alalav de ashkar biyantav. So the Gemara says, well, maybe it blackened on Yantav. Now that brings us to nira v'nitchahu. That's even a higher form of dichui, where it was eligible and then becomes ineligible, and by you removing the berries, now becomes re-eligible. So Shma Mina Nira V'Nitcha V'Choz V'Nira. Now, if that's true, if what we're saying is correct, so then this is going to be the highest form of Dichui, and yet we're ignoring Dichui as it relates to mitzvos. So Lo Lo Olam Dashcha Mikara Dichu Mikara Delavi Dichu Tifsha Minei Aval Nira V'Nitcha Choz V'Nira Lo Tifsha. So the Gemara says, so let's scale back. Let's be conservative over here. We will assume that it blackened before Yantav. Yes, it's true, it will resolve the question of dichui mi'ikara, but that's the lesser form of dichui. Good. But to say that it blackened the anyant of itself, and to therefore conclude on nir v'nitcha, the Gemara says, that far I don't want to go. Tana Rabbanan. Ein mematim yom tov mishum Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon omre mematim. So, over here, a question as to whether or not you can remove the berries anyant of. Now, the Mishnah says that you're not allowed to remove the berries anyant of. But the Brice over here quotes the Shita of Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, who allows you to remove the berries on Yantav. So the Gemara says, Vahaka Misake Mana. The Gemara says, I don't understand. Removing the berries on Yantav, so that's Tikkun Mana. Meaning, as we didn't spell this out in the Mishnah, but now is a great time to spell it out. What is the problem with the removal of the berries on Yantav? The problem is that you made something ineligible, something that's pasul, now you made a kasher. You've therefore rendered it into a kli. Not precisely, not exactly. But the fact that it was halachically disqualified, and now you're making it qualified, so it's like tikkun kli. And so as a result of that, it is usur on Shabbos or on Yantav. Okay, it falls under the category of makeh bepatish. And so therefore, it would be usur. So the Gemara says, so what is the shita of Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Shimon, that allows you to do so on Yantav? So Amar Ravashi could go and shaliktan la'achila. Now the Gemara says, well, you picked off the berries because you wanted to eat the berries. Which, by the way, gives us the clear indication over here that whatever these berries are that I've never seen before, but again, that doesn't mean anything, just means that it means I never seen them. So it means that they're edible. So the Gemara says that when you picked them off, you did not pick them off in order to fix your hadas, you picked them off because you want to eat them. The Gemara says, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, Sevela Kavua, Damar Davishin, Miskavin Mutar. Rabbi Elazar holds like his father, Rabbi Shimon, that this is and now falls under the category of Davishin and Miskavin, and therefore it's going to be Mutar. So the Gemara asks, Vaha Abai, Virava, Damar Tavai, Mutar, Rabbi Shimon, Bipsik, Resha, Veloyamos. So, okay, it's true that your intention was not to correct or to fix the hadas, but it is inevitable. This is a classic example of a davishena miska, of a psik resha, where even if it's not my kavana, but nevertheless, we can't ignore the fact that the tikkun of the hadas will be misukan, it will be fixed, it will be corrected by virtue of the fact that I'm picking off the excess berries, even though my intention is only to eat the berries. You can't ignore the reality. And the way Rashi describes it, of course you're having kavana for the tikkun mana because it's inevitable. So hakav in my skin and this leo shana chrita. So the Gemara says, well, you happen to also have another set of hadasim. So over here, the reason why it's acceptable, the reason why it doesn't fall under the category of psik resha, is because you happen to have another set of hadasim. Okay, there is a lengthy and extensive discussion, which unfortunately we're not going to have, and that is that how does having another set of hadasim remove the problem of psik resha? So there is, it is a lengthy discussion, and I'll just simply put in a pause over here, insert lengthy discussion, but unfortunately we're not gonna entertain the discussion over here. You can see Tosus over here who highlights some of the points to consider over here. Tana Rabbanan just finishing up the daf. Hutar, Agdo, B'yamtov, Ogdo, Ka'agudah Shal Yerek. Now, let's say your egg comes undone on Yantav. So what you'll do is you'll basically wrap it up like you wrap up vegetables. So in other words, basically what the Brisa here is concerned about is not getting into a problem of making a knot on Yantav. So va'amayli anvei me'anav, the Gemara says, now, why doesn't the Brisa over here just simply make a bow, tie around some sort of string, or palm frond, or whatever the case may be, and make a bow. So hamani Rav Yehudi, so the Gemara says that the author of this Brisa is Rav Yehuda, damar anivak shira mayasehi. Rav Yehuda is of the opinion that making a bow would be a violation of kosher. So e Rav Yehuda, egen mayasa baye. So the Gemara says, if it's really the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda, so you need to make a legitimate tie around it, meaning lulav tzarech eged. And so according to Rabbi Yehuda, why is it good just to simply wrap it up like a bundle of vegetables? So I tana savala kevaseh bechada upalik ala bechada. So that whoever the author of this brisa is, does not have the eged requirement of Rabbi Yehuda, that it has to be an eged malyasa, meaning he's just tying it up for the purposes of organization and making it look nice. But in terms of kshira b'shabbos, so he does hold like Rabbi Yehuda, which means that not only can you not make a full-fledged knot, but you can't even make an anava as well. You can't even make a bow. Okay, and that's why the author of this brisa says that you should tie it up, like just wrap it up like a bundle of vegetables. Good. It kind of takes us to the end of the daf. We'll stop over here. Tomorrow we start with a rava. A quick recap of the highlights of today's daf. We entered into the world of Hadassim when we spent the day today with Hadassim. At the beginning of the daf, we learned how we get from the Lashon HaTorah to actual Hadassim. The Gemara entertains other possibilities of other meaning. The Gemara rejects them based on various considerations. Okay, and then the Gemara goes into the halachas. Number one, halacha, what if the majority of the leaves fall out, as long as it's still braided, so then it would be acceptable. What is the Gemara talking about? Hadassim dimitzra'ah. Okay, and the Gemara speaks out how to understand that. Three really difficult lines on Lamed Gimel Amud Aleph. What if the majority of the leaves have dried up, but you have three remaining moist leaves? So as long as they're at the top of the Hadassim, they're going to be kosher. Exactly how to navigate those three lines, they're challenging. We went through Rashi this morning and hopefully gave a working shot within Rashi. The heads of the Hadassim are clipped off. The Gemara discussed and described. Where do we stand on the issue of dichui? Is there dichui by mitzvos? By kabbanos, there's only dichui. Is there dichui on mitzvos? Rav Papa says that there is no dichui on mitzvos, but even within Rav Papa, was he only saying that because he was mesupak, and therefore he was just being machmir, or was he saying it definitively? The Gemara leaves that question unresolved. The Gemara suggested that maybe the question of dichui by mitzvos is actually a machlokes hatanayim. The Gemara sidestepped that issue because we gave two alternative ways to explain the machlokes between the Tanakama who was the Bar Plukta? Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Tzadok. The Gemara points out that the mitzvah of making an eged on your dalaminim, is that required or is that just simply a lichatchila? Machlokus between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim. Rabbi Yehuda says it's required and the Chachamim said it's just a lichatchila for making it beautiful. Finally, last couple of discussions that we had today is that if, in fact, your berries are green, so even if the berries exceed the leaves, that would be fine. If you have a berry growing in the place where the head was clipped off, as long as a berry grows on top, it would be fine. When did the berry grow there? Good. That brings us back to the discussion of dichui. And finally, you're not allowed to remove the berries on yantif if the berries exceed. The Gemara quotes a brisa that says that if the berries, the Gemara quotes a brisa that the Tanakhama says you're not allowed to remove it, and Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Shimon says you are allowed to remove it. How is Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Shimon allowing you to do so? It would be a Isser of Tikkun Mana, and it would certainly be fall under the category of Psik Resha. The Gemara says that you had another Hadas, and therefore it would be fine. How exactly does that work? To be discussed on another occasion. Okay, Adkan.